Hello and welcome to another episode of Corporate Buzz. I'm your host Kirtana Tiwari, and with me is Money Control's Corporate Bureau Chief Prince Thomas to discuss the top corporate news of the week. Hi Prince, welcome to the show.
Hi Kirtana, thank you.
Prince, this week we saw one of the biggest news has been that Bharat Biotech and some of the other Indian labs have come up with a vaccine for COVID. What does this mean for the pharma sector? And, you know, because there are some other vaccines that are coming out. So what's happening there?
Yeah, surely it's a very encouraging news, because I think numbers of COVID-19 infection have been increasing across in India and other parts of the world also. So the focus and the need has been for a vaccine as urgently as possible. So it's a very surprise development that, you know, Bharat Biotech now also has a deadline. You know, the deadline is that by August 15th, it has to launch the vaccine. Now, there are many reasons why the government would have chosen the ICMR, the lab which is involved here, would have chosen Bharat Biotech, and probably it's because the company has had experience with a similar experience with the vaccine for rotavirus, H1N1.
Right.
And it has done work on this front. And again, it was along with ICMR that it had developed these vaccines. So choosing Bharat Biotech, I think, probably was very easy for the ICMR. The critical thing here, I think, is about the August 15 deadline, because the trials themselves are to be done, you know, and these trials take a lot of time. Sometimes the trials take up to 6 months. Now, we are already in the start of July, and it was just talking about 45 days before the vaccine comes in. Surely these are not normal times. The focus, not just in India, but across all companies and governments where vaccines are being developed, is about the timeline. But the critical factor is, does it also compromise the quality of vaccine? So that is the thing here. But I think it surely looks like Bharat Biotech, because of this deadline, has actually taken a global leap. You know, you had all these big global pharma majors were developing vaccine, but a relatively unknown Indian company seems to have taken a leap. It's probably too early to say. It may have taken a leap, but it's too early to really conclude. I think we'll have to wait for further developments happening over the next 1 month, and finally to see how sacrosanct that August 15th deadline is. Remember, August 15th is the Independence Day, so right. I think it's very symbolic also. So is that why August 15th has been chosen as a deadline? We don't know, but it surely is a tough task.
Right. And is there any word on any support that they are getting, like financially or otherwise?
Bharat Biotech, financially, a lot of companies have been joining hands together to develop vaccines. You know, not just vaccines, even for other antiviral drugs that we've seen. In the case of Remdesivir, we've seen Gilead, you know, joining hands with almost a dozen companies in India.
Right.
You know, and they would be manufacturing the drug in India. It's similar. Serum India has also tied up with, I think, with Oxford University and with other players also. With Bharat Biotech, I'm not sure if it has got any investment, but the support from ICMR is very crucial, because given that it's a government institute, it has access to a lot of information, data, facilities. I think that is very critical than any financial aid coming in. So I see that ICMR has chosen Bharat Biotech is a big moment for the company.
Right. Indian origin businessman Sanjeev Gupta has offered to buy the Port Talbot plant of the Tata Steel. Should Tata Steel buy it? And what is the situation there? Because there was already an offer on the table, right?
Yes, Kirtana. So the timing actually is very interesting, because Port Talbot, as you know, is under quite a bit of stress. It has been a loss-making unit for Tata Steel. Mm-hmm. And the unit also, the legacy is from Corus, which Tata Steel had bought about 14 years ago. So the problem is, Tata Steel has been asking for financial aid from the British government to, you know, revive the factory. But there has been a lot of negotiations are going on. And reports from UK say that Tata Steel is close to getting a deal, but it may not be £500 million.
Right.
Now, in such a situation, Sanjeev Gupta has come in, and he is someone who has bought multiple assets of Tata Steel in UK, and has turned them around, and was running them profitably till COVID-19 came. I mean, everyone across the world has been affected by COVID-19, and Sanjeev Gupta's Liberty Steel too. But okay. The fact is that he took over Tata Steel's factories and turned them around. And he had nearly bought Port Talbot also as part of that deal.
Okay.
But in sources say that in the last moment, Tata Steel changed its mind. Mm-hmm. Now, Sanjeev Gupta coming again and saying that he's ready to look at the deal again and probably also ready to buy Port Talbot is significant, because finding a buyer in this market is very difficult. And Tata Steel has a ready, buyer in the form of Sanjeev Gupta. So should Tata Steel consider his offer? I think it surely should, because even if the UK government's, financial aid does come in, it is still going to take a lot of time and effort and resources for Tata Steel to turn around Port Talbot. Because already in the Netherlands unit also there is trouble. The workers have gone on a strike. Steel demand overall hasn't been great, and we know that in UK energy costs are very high, so steel making is not very profitable as of now. So in these circumstances, if someone comes up and says that I'm ready to buy your loss making assets, I think Tata Steel should surely consider it very seriously.
Okay, let's see what the progress is there, maybe in the coming weeks.
That's true.
Let's talk about a very interesting case between the Emami and Hindustan Unilever. Hindustan Unilever has now changed their, they have decided to rename their men's fairness cream, and this is coming after the whole Black Lives Matter issue. But why exactly has Emami objected to this? And they also have mentioned that they will seek legal consultation on this matter.
That's right. Yes, Kitna. So apart from, it's not just about Fair and Handsome, it's also Unilever, Hindustan Unilever rebranding Fair and Lovely into Glow and Lovely. And the men's cream has become Glow and Handsome. The problem here occurring is that, one, Emami already has a men skincare brand called Fair and Handsome. And it claims that it has already, trademarked Glow and Handsome also. And which is interesting here is that it licensed this, trademarked it only a week ago. So looks like, there was some, like Emami was trying to, check what HUL would have done and was trying to, be a step ahead in taking the trademark for Glow and Handsome. And it's very interesting because the focus has always been on the women skincare segment, because that is surely the one that is bigger. Now, but HUL coming and saying that it has also taken that trademark for Glow and Handsome, and then Emami coming out with its own counterclaim, I think it's very interesting. I think this is not the last we are hearing about it. But in all this, are we really, missing out the core issue, which is about, is targeting skin color correct? It makes a lot of money for all these companies when they promise that, their products will make people fairer. And that is the whole issue, isn't it? About the protest that's happened in the US, and then Johnson & Johnson saying because of that, they're going to withdraw their skincare product from the market. And then we had Unilever saying that they're going to change the name of Fair & Lovely, rebrand it. So I think now what's happening is that the whole focus is now on the market of skincare. And it just shows that despite the rebranding and change in name, I think companies are going to go very well aggressive in this segment because it is a big market for them. And probably the real issue, the critical issue about how important the skin color, racism may get lost.
Right. It does seem to be like the first step towards being against these kind of fairness creams. But will it go ahead in the long run? Will this completely change?
Unlikely. See, if it was to be, then instead of just rebranding, then Hindustan Unilever could have just said that we are also taking the product out of the market, just like Johnson & Johnson. Now, the thing is, Johnson & Johnson's product wasn't a big player in the Indian skincare market.
Right.
So, it didn't have much of a, loss. But for someone like Hindustan Unilever or for Emami, it's a bigger call because their products, Fair & Lovely probably has almost 80% of the market share.
Right.
So that's a huge call to make. So it made good optics to say that they're rebranding it and changing the name. But it would require a much more willpower to really take the product out of the market.
Right. Moving on to the last topic, we have been talking about India and China and the standoff, but it seems that now Indian IT companies, they were already trying to expand its presence in China, but now it's going to be even harder for them after the standoff. Can you explain why this is happening?
I think even last year, I think Manikontrol, our colleague Swati, had done a story about how probably after the US and the Europe, which are the two biggest markets for Indian IT companies, China probably is the next big frontier. There was Japan, but I don't think Japan really broad scale for them. But given the way China has developed, and it is already the second biggest economy in the world, and with the presence of nearly all global companies in China, so China actually looked like the big next big market for the Indian IT companies. So but the numbers may not be that big. You know, even now, just about 3% of revenues for Indian IT and BPO companies come from China. But then from last year, we've seen that Indian companies are beginning to make investments in China, you know, and that included probably HCL, and we have seen other companies also increasing their headcount. So right now, about 5,000 Indian IT professionals were there in China. So it was becoming a big focus market for them, and then the whole standoff with China has happened.
Right.
Now, important thing is that just apart from China being a market in itself, it is also important because all these companies, say American, European, or other companies who are clients for Indian IT firms, for them China is big, and all these companies are looking for service providers who are present everywhere. So for Indian IT companies, it made sense for them to be present in China because their clients were also present in China. Standoff now could hurt them now because Indian government has already started taking, you know, economic steps. These are not direct sanctions, but then we have seen, apps being banned and shipments from China getting delayed at the ports. So it won't be surprising if China also, you know, retaliates in some manner, which would hurt India and Indian companies economically. So that way, it is a kind of a setback for Indian IT companies.
Right. Prince, are there any other sectors that will get affected the same way, companies that are trying to establish in China?
Yeah, in the sense, India is a net importer from China, but we also do export quite a bit there. Mm-hmm. So, and Indian companies, not all of them are present, but then they have, for instance, I think Tata Motors through its JLR unit has a significant presence in China. Now, it will be a big loss if China tries to restrict JLR's operations in China because China is a critical market for JLR. On top of that, then we have exports. So we do export iron ore. We export, I think, chemicals also to China. And I may be wrong here, but I think even gems and jewelry also are exported to China.
Mm-hmm.
So China is an important market for us. So any kind of retaliation will do hurt, and the timing is equally bad, isn't it? Because sectors are just trying to get back to their normal levels. They're still very far from that point. And now an additional challenge coming to them would really hurt and make things worse.
Right. Prince, also speaking about the apps that have been recently banned by the government, is this going to make a large impact, and how are they going to retaliate China?
We really don't know. If China was to retaliate, probably it would have said something till now by now. I think it really hasn't said anything about the ban. And if you actually go through the list of the 59 apps, frankly, I hadn't heard 90% of them. I probably don't use any of them. I don't even use TikTok. Mm-hmm. But then TikTok was the biggest of the apps. It had a huge following in India. I mean, I think about 200 million subscribers. Few of those apps were doing very well in India. It would be a loss for them if they are, because as we know right now, these companies are engaging with the government to see what they could do to, overcome the apprehensions of the government. But I think, let's see, will government, revoke the ban? We don't know. It may very much depends upon how the relation between China and India pans out.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. But then I think it's important. It's an opportunity for Indian app makers also. And we are already seeing TikTok competitors coming up, you know, Indian apps giving good competition to TikTok. So it can be an opportunity, but let's see how it goes.
Sure. Thank you so much for your insights, Prince.
You're welcome, Kitna.
With that, it's a wrap on this episode of Topic Buzz. If you have any other queries or suggestions, or you want us to cover a specific topic, do write to us at mcpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views and updates, stay locked down to Money Control. Thank you for listening.